This is United Tribes News Radio. Insights into Native culture, people, ideas, topics to improve understanding. From United Tribes Technical College in Bismarck. This is United Tribes News Radio Special Events Edition, Trauma in Native Communities, from United Tribes Technical College in Bismarck. United Tribes hosted the first ever U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs field hearing about the detrimental impact traumatic events can have on tribal communities, particularly on Native children. North Dakota U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp's hearing expands on the efforts launched in May in Washington, D.C. to address and raise awareness about the issue of trauma and mental health in Indian country. In this program, you will hear from U.S. Senators Heidi Heitkamp and Senator John Hoeven, as well as Dr. Tammy Dakota, a licensed clinical psychologist who owns and operates Dakota Trauma Informed Care and Practice, LLC in Bismarck, who explains what happens to the body physically, mentally, and emotionally when a person experiences trauma. Also, Jesse Takenalive from the Standing Rock Reservation, a former tribal chairman, explains why the way of life for the Lakota has been filled with trauma and grief for generations and what impacts this field hearing will have on the Lakota people. Heitkamp says it's no secret Native children live in poverty more often, attempt suicide more often, and experience severe lack of economic and educational opportunity more often. But what's not happening often enough is a concerted federal effort to protect their well-being.
One of the things that I've been doing, and we're going to expand to more members, but I'm talking about issues saying, what can we do working together? And so we started first with staff in the Senate, inviting people to seminars, basically. I think they're usually about 2 hours, right, Megan? Yeah, a little bit more than that because they engage in conversation. But basically introducing this at a staff level and then building up to get more people engaged at the Senate level, at the senator level, and then start talking about how this fits into programming for behavior and mental health, how this fits into our need for not only just treatment but recovery. You know, we talk about treatment. The easy part of treatment is getting people sober, because usually when we put them in treatment programs, they don't have access. The tough part of treatment is recovery, and recovery is so much longer, and recovery has to include this. I visited Bruce Gillette at Nandan Hadatsa Narikra, and he's an addiction counselor. He runs a program, and he can't do it in-house. He does it outpatient. And I asked him, I said, do you do trauma counseling? And he said, oh, no. He said, the last thing, I mean, I'm just trying to get him sober enough so that that's a long-term struggle, a long-term strategy at that point. And he said he experienced every adverse childhood experience. So he's a, you know, from his recovery, he knows what that means. But getting people young and getting them ready to learn, then we're going to build a workforce. You know, Senator Hoeven's been particularly aggressive on economic development on the reservations. We know that having a job is a very meaningful experience, but we have to get people ready to learn and ready to work.
And I think, again, this is an effort to pull some of the disparate efforts, together in more of a comprehensive or systematic way. For example, we passed the Native American Children's Safety Act, which essentially, it's similar to a law that we passed here in North Dakota when I was governor, and it just requires the background checks be done on any adult in a foster home, not just the head of the household. Well, that now is a requirement across the reservations to make sure that anyone in that home doesn't pose a threat to those children in the home and those foster children in the home. Okay, well, that is a concrete step and a good one, but it needs to be part of a greater whole. And so I think that's where Senator Heitkamp and our witnesses today who are out there, again, on the front lines making it happen. This is an effort to start to pull these different things together in a more comprehensive way so that we get, real results on a broader basis across the reservations.
One of the challenges that we have with programming is siloing. Right. You know, and you heard it today, we're gonna take care of suicide, but we don't deal with trauma, we don't deal with early childhood education. That really is the theory behind our bill, which creates a national level commission on the status of children, named after Alice Spotted Bear, a great educator up at Nandan Hadatsa Ricker, and I know she's up there pulling for it. she's always been such an inspiration for me, and her story hopefully gets embedded in the hope that we can find in really looking comprehensively. And that's really the theory behind that bill. We can't not have law enforcement talking to service providers. We can't have early childhood education not talking to law enforcement. And it's all got to work together, and it's got to be driven locally. And I think Senator Hovind made that point over and over today, that if we simply design a program top down, we're not going to be successful. And we have to be in it for the long haul, because we've heard so many good programs, 18 months funding's gone. Out. And so we have to not give up. And I think this is, I'm hoping that what people get out of this is a lot of hope that we can change outcomes, when I think a lot of people get cynical and don't feel very hopeful. Well, I hope that when you looked in that room and you saw service providers that are local, you saw an opportunity for people to come together to listen to this testimony and then follow up with a roundtable. Chairman McLeod said it best. Get on the ground. I mean, every one of these people said, and Tammy said, don't sit in a desk somewhere. Get out where the problem is. And that's really what we're trying to do. Get out where the problem is. Get out and tell people, look, this isn't just something that we talk about in Washington. We're talking about it right here. Both Senator Hovind and I have had experience in state government. Senator as the governor, and I was the attorney general. We know what role the state can play in integrating those services, and really you heard today the county. But if you look at the challenges at Standing Rock dealing with county social services, all of Sioux County is in the boundaries of the reservation. Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara is six counties. That creates a huge challenge in integrating counties that we need to recognize, and that's why one size doesn't fit all.
Yeah, I mean, it's to hear directly from people who are on the ground and making a difference, again, like just the great testimony that we had today from people that are out there working hard to make a difference.
You can't bet to kill chatahan so wagla kick the low. All at the Hawashicho Ankdalo. I have spoken in our language purposely to remind us that our life in the world we live in is still alive and well. It's called Native American life, it's called many things, but along with that comes a way of thinking. Along with that, we know it's a simple, beautiful way of living. No strings attached. It's about life and living. And this morning, we heard about surviving. And our children are living that. We heard a lot of truths this morning from our panel of experts. How trying to survive for generations has impacted our DNA. So sometimes it's hard for our relatives to trust. Sometimes it gets too quiet for them and they panic. We're heading back to that time of being truly Lakota. And when I say Lakota, that's our way in our language of describing indigenous peoples of this world, of this hemisphere. I say that because our grandmas and our grandpas, when they would see somebody of color, the first thing they'll look at each other and say, hey, Lakota, is that person one of us? Is that person grew up like us on this hemisphere? And if there's an affirmative, then that person is good. We can relate to that person. So we do live in two worlds. And for 24 years, I was honored to serve our people from Standing Rock. 4 years as a tribal chairman and a balance as a councilman. And it was encouraging this morning to sit and listen to the hearing, because I wasn't in the arena for once. But I did have a front row seat. I could feel, I could hear, I could see us working together and yet struggling to look at the solutions. And when I say we live in two worlds, immediately our youngsters at home and our communities at home, they experience trauma, unfortunately, because we believe that we come from a place we call Makoche Ihankia Washte, a land of beauty. And when the stars fall, we say there's a whole bunch of more souls and spirits coming to experience this life on earth. And they're hoping that it's going to be a beautiful life. They come with a language, they come with a history, they come with a spirit that's indigenous. So when my grandparents would say, "Hela kota," that's one of the reasons why they would say that, is that person one of us. So immediately, the challenge is to maintain that identity, to maintain that language, that spirit, that love for life. The word Wola Kota means peace, to live in peace. But the challenge is there. We don't get a chance to speak our language. Almost 100 years ago, there was federal policy that made it illegal for us to speak our language. So the opportunity to express ourselves was taken away by a government foreign to us, by a government that didn't understand us, and today is still trying to understand us. But the message is of peace. One of our leaders from back home said, "I was never the aggressor. I fought only to defend the women and children." And that leader was Sitting Bull. And that's what caused me to go to college and study history. And I found out why my grandparents lived the way they lived. I found out that all the skirmishes and fights between us and our non-Indian friends took place on our land. Then I began to develop that understanding that I'm okay. Crazy sounding last name, but I'm okay. So we live in two worlds. And immediately we find out one of the realities of life is our life expectancy as Lakota men is very low. So we don't get to say Lala or Grandpa for too long because they leave us and they go home. And all the efforts to change that are being put in place. We're trying our best. But as a great grandfather told me, and I feel honored to share this with you, he didn't speak a word of English, but he said, "Takoja, ampete muji ut, naskawi tasha, wota boti hecha na kinkte. We chapre mila hena tata yaunkte, hena nukte take, ea skawi tasha e kolomuya pe ota. Ho ash, henet at the wiak bakbala hena yuzaja. Washtelakab, ho ashkik suye ot hakoja. We chapre kihe, ugunachti dua takoshijai chu. Doe ti we chak de seche. Not the way, and we and we yakba seche. Wakba bala yaka ash. Doe he unhatanis, na ne nuhatanis, nija woks up and it hall. Yankte, Niganashkinkte, Yetche, Ho, Ash, My grandpa said, "Grandson, there'll be a day when you're going to go to our friends, our non-Indian friends. They have houses. The only purpose you go there is to eat. And our non-Indian friends, they like things that are really shiny. So you're going to see their utensils in front of you." And he says, "Don't forget to offer the prayer to the Creator. Because if those utensils, the fork or the spoon, went into the mouth of somebody who either committed one of two taboo things, murder or rape, for a while, if you don't offer the prayer, don't ask the Creator to clean it, you're going to lose your mind for a while." That's XJWI Chashatawa, a common man, simple man thinking. The good senator used the word common, and I remembered that. Simple XJWI. My grandpa said that. Never set one foot of one day of schooling in his life. And I remember that we live in two worlds. And it's good. We're going to get beyond surviving. We're going to live. We are going to live. The good senator talked about tobacco. I was handed some chashasha. If you ask somebody that speaks our language, what is chashasha? They're going to say it's tobacco. They may say it's red willow tobacco, but it's tobacco. And this is what it looks like. But there's no chemicals in it. It's come from the red willow tree. This is what we put in our chanupa. Again, the book's called Peace Pipe. A gift from the Creator. So we live in two worlds. We understand the harmful effects that cause death and dying with the tobacco. All due respect to Marlboro and Winston, all the other. The chemicals that are put in there cause us the pain and death. Good senator said medicine. In our language, you say prejuta. Our words are prejuta. Our songs are prejuta. Our friendship is prejuta. Because everybody wants to belong. When we see a young person out there that contemplates suicide and sadly completes it, they felt that they didn't belong. So our words, our language is spiritual. Our language is healing. And to think, almost 100 years ago, it was illegal to speak. My late father has stories about when he first went to school in Little Eagle, South Dakota, at the Little Eagle Day School, and spoke language and was hit with a ruler. And the teacher told him not to speak that language. And he told his cousin, "I don't understand her. What did she say?" So he got hit again. We live in two worlds. And now, beautiful stories of our language coming back. Beautiful stories. And I get a lump in my throat when I think about one of our grandchildren understands me when I speak. In response to me when I speak. And I hope I can see in my time where that, when we say that's an Indian school, where the language will be in there. The curriculum will be about our culture. That is what we're talking about. And I tell my young friends, my young relatives, those who have done awesome achievements as lawyers, when they say they study Indian law, I ask them to think about something. Is it Indian law or is it federal Indian law? Because we live in two worlds. Indian law is simple. Indian law is full of truth. Indian law means protecting our people. That's what Indian law is. So as we come across these solutions, I'm really happy for all the work that has gone on so far. Because not one man, not one woman, I should say that the other way, not one woman, not one man can do it on their own. And I corrected myself because our Lakota society is matriarchal. It's based off the woman and her love for humanity. So I do a little presentation every now and then to young people, but particularly young men. Our motto is, as Lakota men, is we provide and our beautiful partners decide. That's a Lakota motto. It's how long you've been married? Well, today it's 41 years. Well, it's going to be 42 in January. But that's the motto that my grandparents and my parents told us about. Women are special. We call our children Waka'iechecha, Wakaija. We live in two worlds. And all we're asking for is for that second step. The good senator, or what was mentioned here, that first step in our thinking as Lakota, Daku Yuha Numpa Wichoni Kile. This life is made of everything with two understandings. There's two of everything of this earth. There's man, there's woman, there's dark, there's cold, there's light, there's dark, there's hot, there's cold, on and on and on. There's two of everything. So I would ask us to start thinking, what is that second step going to be? What is that second step going to be? When we reach that, when we're satisfied with it, then the Creator is going to give us another task to do with two steps. We live in two worlds. We are in a process, it's called decolonization. Restoring what was stolen, what was taken from the child, what was taken from the family. When we see a teepee, we have to take that second step. Typically, the first step is about romanticizing that teepee and how beautiful it looks, how it makes us feel. And that's good. We should continue to feel that. The next step should take us inside that teepee. Come inside that teepee and learn about the stories of that teepee. Come inside there and understand that we're never out of contact with the stars. There's that little opening in the teepee. Unless we're in a sweat lodge ceremony, unless there's a vision quest ceremony where some of our relatives have been given a dream to dig a pit, we're never out of contact with the stars. We say that we come from the stars. We're people of the stars. And there's an awesome prayer that we're all familiar with. Not trying to proselytize here, my friends and relatives. But when we say on heaven as it is in earth, our Lakota, we live that every day. Continuous contact with the stars. Continuous. On heaven as it is in earth. Beautiful stories about the teepee and what that means. So step number two. Come inside the teepee. Literally. I know there'll be an opportunity here at United Tribes and the celebration goes on. You all call powwow. We call it woshkate. Time to contest, time to have fun, time to celebrate. Go inside the teepee. I don't think Dr. McDonald is going to say, no, that's just for looks. He won't say that. I know him too well. He's always a welcoming Dakota relative, a Dakota nephew. Come on into our teepee. Literally walk into the teepee. A simple request from our children who are reclaiming, renewing, reliving, getting out of survival mode and wanting to live. taking part actively in our ceremonies. There's always this desire by all of us at home in our communities to hear and to feel the language. To hear and to feel the language. How inspiring that is for us. Young people say, "Lala, I'm glad you call me Kakosha. Oh, I don't know exactly what it means, but it feels good. Grandpa, I don't know why you call me Kakosha," which means in our language, grandchild. "I'm not too sure what it means, but it really feels good. Uncle, when you call me Tuja. Uncle, when you call me Tushka, it really feels good. Uncle, when you call me niece, uncle, when you call me nephew, it feels good." That's only one word. Just think how beautiful our languages are. We say they're spiritual, and they are. Instantly, we're reconnected with each other. So nobody feels alone. Nobody feels alone. Because we say we're all related. Providing hope is such a simple task. Speaking truth is such a simple task. They say that it doesn't take too many words to speak the truth. A lot of times our ancestors would sit with their heads down because we only got one mouth, we got two ears, we can cue in on what's going on. We can feel the truth in somebody's words. The moccasin telegraph is real. We know we can connect with each other. The belief in our Creator, the belief in the spirit world is so strong that the words that are spoken here are being felt, for example, at the huge encampment just north of Standing Rock. If you haven't been there, I encourage you to go there. You'll get a feeling of what we're talking about from Indian country. Healing through feeling. Instead of saying boots on the ground, we say moccasins are on the ground now. Moccasins of truth are on the ground. And I love our young people for what they're doing. You have to see it. They're willing to lay it all down. They're willing to lay it all down. They understand what mini wichoni is. They understand it when we say water is life. Our young people, there's a whole host of them from the Ocheti Shakoi, from the seven council fires. They're willing to lay it all down because they love our way of life. They love their relatives. Go see it. Go feel it. It's awesome. Wish you didn't have to gather under these pretenses. But I don't want any young person to have to lay it all down. But I do know there's a lot of them that are willing to say, "We're going to lay it all down. We don't want the water to be contaminated. The moccasins are on the ground. The grandfathers have come. The grandfathers are going to help us." Finally, we know how to share. We know how to share the solutions. It's in our DNA to share. As indigenous people, it's in our DNA. Always has been. Wa'ushila, we call it. Have compassion, have love for mankind. We all come from the same place. One Creator made us all. One Creator is like a gardener. He sprinkled his seeds of mankind on earth, and we see the beauty of life. The cultures, the language, etc., etc., etc. It's in our DNA to share. So it's with that heart and that understanding, my friend, Senator Heitkamp, we've known each other for a long time. I met her first when she was a state employee, I believe the attorney general back in the day. But we're not old. But on behalf of the young people at that encampment, they're doing it for love. And we're going to cry hard if one of them has to choose to lay it down. I'll ask you in a humble way to remember them tonight before you go to sleep. It's a beautiful scene. But as a Lakota person, I also know what that means. I also know that they love life so much that it's unthinkable, it's unfathomable in our other world, as we say. You ka enana ke tona wa shi chana ke u pila e chaya. Bilhele ali as kampelo. U pila un ke ni chapelo. In closing, on behalf of the young people at the camp and throughout our communities, I want to say thank you to all of you who put your hearts, your labors, your sacrifices, and are finding these solutions. We thank you for that. And we ask the Creator to give you more energy, to take care of you, to give you health, because you're providing that hope. Dr. Dakota was with us for years, and they still talk about her and her works and her colleagues. And when the young people who now probably have children, when they talk about her, there's that ray of hope. Even though they haven't seen her for years, as we haven't. And we thank her and others like her for all the work that goes on. We know what to do. It's not a lack of intelligence. It's a lack of resources. We know what to do. That second step, in a humble way, provide the resources. You will see us begin to live and not survive any longer. With that, my new life is to be a high school teacher. I told a lot of folks back home, I'm done. I thank them for opportunities to speak like this in front of people. Now my energies are going to be to our children at the McLaughlin High School, doing my best to teach them our language, our culture, and our history. So with that, Wopila Tanka Chichu Hapelo, from the bottom of my heart, thank you all for listening. Thank the panel of experts for all the work that they do, and may Tungashila help them continue to do more work. Pilama apelo, thank you so much. Hechituelo.
So we're then in a state of freeze or collapse. The result is a feeling of numbness and not even being present or alive. The person may not even register pain. This is a state of self-preservation. For many people, the fight or flight response, as scary as that is preferred. When people are in the state of freeze, of collapse, they feel numb. They feel like they're not alive. So they're very prone to seeking chaos or danger, and it may explain why some people with trauma are prone to cutting. What happens is people actually get stuck in these states. So people who have chronic trauma can get stuck in a fight or flight state where they have high stress hormones and they're hypervigilant and always perceiving threat. Or they can get stuck in a freeze state where they're in a state of collapse. And this is very similar to the concept of learned helplessness. If an individual is in this state and they feel nothing and they cut on their skin or they mutilate themselves in some way, they get a boost of a stress hormone. They get a boost of cortisol. And that cortisol, that boost, pushes them up into fight or flight for a moment. And that feels better for most people than the state of collapse, because at least when they're here, they can feel something. They can feel alive. And so this explains why so many of our traumatized individuals seek chaotic relationships. They continue to repeat patterns of abusive relationships and self-harm. So I referenced learned helplessness. Learned helplessness is a condition where the individual is not able to, the longer an individual is in an uncontrollable situation, the greater the number of times they will have practiced inappropriate responses. They're not able to respond. They're literally not able to respond because their system has shut down in so many ways. They can't reason or rationalize themselves back to a healthy response. Think about this in terms of our history of genocide, of multiple traumas across generations, days, months, years, decades, generations of building highly practiced inappropriate responses, such as, and we could name those, substance abuse, violence, things that are unhealthy for us. Those are states of learned helplessness, and we often ask ourselves with these traumatized individuals, why can't they just do this? Why can't they just make a better decision? Why don't they go and stop doing this? Why do they keep going back to this relationship? Why don't they just get up and apply for a job? Because their system, their physiology is in this state where they really can't function and motivate themselves into a healthier response. We've talked about the Indian boarding school. This is an important slide to me because there's been a lot of very traumatic things that have happened in the history of Indian people. But this particular event of removing Indian children from their homes broke every connection that the Indian had. It broke their connection with relationships, culture, language, their God, as they knew him. And this is important when we're talking about trauma and trauma recovery, because the breaking of those relationships creates deficits in attachment capacity. And attachment problems arise from repeated experiences of trauma. And unless there's a targeted intervention to teach parents how to form healthy and secure attachments with their children, the cycle perpetuates itself over and over. We're raising children that are insecurely attached, who have difficulty regulating their own hormones, that are their own stress responses. Even if those children aren't neglected or abused, if they're not securely attached to their caregiver, they're going to struggle with emotional regulation and other types of development. Having chronic stress hormones also creates a sense of paranoia. And so here we have a history of truth about what's happened, and then we have this sense of paranoia. It becomes very hard to trust people and to build new relationships. So as much as people with trauma desperately want and desire and need relationships for healing, their physiology and their brain tells them that that's too scary, get away. And they'll reject and push away relationships and sort of cause the rejection and the separation that they fear the most. So what's exciting about this is that research is showing that self-management can really heal trauma. So mindfulness, movement, and rhythm are very important, since emotions are registered in the body and we have this vagus nerve which connects the brain with many of our internal organs. We can directly train our own arousal system through mindfulness, movement, and rhythm. These are principles that have been used by Native cultures since the beginning of time. We already have these principles in our culture. Drumming is rhythmic. Dancing is rhythmic movement. We have cultural, ceremonial things that are healing to us. We know how to do those. I love this picture because it's a picture of group of individuals, men, collecting a sacred tree for a ceremony, but it shows the relationship base and the connectedness and the working together. And one of the things that we understand now about trauma treatment is that relationships, safe, secure, nurturing relationships above all things, are the most healing for traumatized individuals. Mindfulness, movement, rhythm, relationships, those are the foundational elements of our Native culture.
I've spent a lot of time talking to the folks in Fargo, and I think you look at Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara. I think Mark told me about a third of the enrolled members live off the reservation. That's true across the board. That doesn't mean that we don't need services. And we've been successful in South Dakota, Sioux Falls, in delivering services where people live. One of the concerns that I have is that if someone is living in Fargo and someone gets sick, how do they access health care? They go back to the reservation, taking kids out of school. Again, further disruption, further lack of routine. And so I'm very committed to listening to what you all have to say about what could help in Fargo, including delivery of healthcare systems, working with the schools. I know Dr. Schatz has been terrific to work with. I think he's very informed on trauma. And so what can we do looking at programs that were designed, especially in, and Kirsten's still here, but dollars that come to the urban schools that are supposed to be dedicated to help Native American kids that seem somehow to get diluted in those systems. And you know, I think working with the superintendents, working with the healthcare providers, whether it's community healthcare, taking a look at what we can do in Indian healthcare, looking at not just looking at delivery of behavior and mental health services on the reservations, but also in urban areas where the population has come. This is a great example. This attracts very many Native American people, UTEC does. And so there's a need for services right here in Bismarck, whether it's job placement services, whatever it is. I know that some of the tribal chairmen, especially Chairman Fox, have been working very hard to figure out that piece of it. So I want you to know, even though we've been talking about Indian country and talking about services in remote locations, I have not forgotten the commitment that we have made to all Native people.
This program was produced by United Tribes Technical College, Office of Public Information, Dennis Newman, Director, Alicia Heglin-Thorpe, Producer. This series is designed not only to strengthen our communities, but to give insight and understanding of a tribal culture and a Native people. For more information, visit our website, UTTC.edu.